Before we begin this morning, let's just start with a word of prayer. Father, we come this morning through the name of Jesus, just acknowledging that all that we have and all that we are is of Thee. Father, You know us. You know each one of us. You know our weaknesses. You've made us. And we just ask today for Your direction, Father, as we're together, would You search each heart and bless us, Father, and guide us as we look at the area of finances. We just ask for Your blessing, for Your infilling. We ask this through Jesus' name. Amen. Today we're going to talk a little about biblical finances or stewardship. We're going to think about money and possessions a little, and particularly in your youth. We've titled this Saving and Serving During Our Youth. You know, money and possessions are an interesting thing in the Christian world today, and by and large they have been avoided. We don't tend to think of them as spiritual things. We like to talk about spiritual topics, things like prayer and faith, and those are good theological words. But when it comes to money and possessions, it's just kind of put on a back burner. But Jesus didn't do that to it. In fact, there's a tremendous amount of teaching about money in Scripture. Sometimes I'm afraid we don't like what He said, and so we tend to avoid it. But I want you to think about this. Your checkbook or your banking account is actually a theological document. It's something that tells an awful lot about you. How you use your discretionary income, how you use your money, reveals a lot about yourself. Now, there's a lot of financial teaching out there today. And almost all of it in the Christian realm, if we'll call it that, says that everything we teach you is based on the Bible. How many of you are familiar with Dave Ramsey? Just raise your hand if you've heard that name. Okay? How many are familiar with the name Joel Osteen? Okay, about almost the same. Now, both of these men will tell you that their teachings are based on the Bible. But, you know, I get very leery anymore. In fact, it means just about nothing to me in our society today when someone tells me that their teaching is based on the Bible. And the question is not really whether we can find what we want when we go to the Bible. The question is more, what are you wanting when you go to the Bible? What are you actually searching for? Because most men and women find what they're after. You can go back in Adolf Hitler. He quoted Scripture extensively as he persecuted the Jews. He went after specific things and he found that. But if you're after truth, if truth is actually what you want, it's available there. You can find it. So what are you seeking as you search the Bible? I want to begin with a story this morning. It's a true story about a young girl. And I'll call her Sally. Sally was a young girl that was not raised in a Christian home. And I met her several years ago. She was raised in just an American home. And as she went about her daily life, she observed some people in her community that really looked kind of strange. In fact, the ladies had kind of a white funny thing on their head, and she started to hear different rumors about these people. One of the things she heard was they didn't have television. She could not figure that out. I just, what would you do without television? And she spent her life in the mall and sports activities, and she had a lot going on in her life. But one day, she had a job, and she worked right beside one of these young girls that wore one of these white funny things on her head. And so she started to ask her questions. Just one after another, well, what about this? Why do you do this? Why don't you do this? And Sally told me that the interesting thing was that every time she asked a question, this young girl would give her a biblical verse to explain why she did or didn't do something. And she was so impressed and she wanted to know more. And finally, it evolved into this girl going to church with Sally. And as time went on, she became convicted and she became a believer and started attending this church. And everything was wonderful. And she told me, she said, the leaders of that church told me, if you ever have any questions about something, just come and ask us. And so she did. Sometimes she would ask issues like non-resistance. She struggled with that. And she would go and ask, and they would always give her an answer straight from the Bible. And she was so impressed, but she told me, one day I started reading the teachings of Jesus. And the teachings of Jesus on the issues of money and possessions were radically different than his culture. But when I asked my leaders about these questions, they got a little silent. And their answers sounded a lot like our culture. She said, I was confused. She said, I looked around at the men in our congregation. She said, many of them were extremely wealthy, Many of them were the largest farmers in the area. She said, and the things they were pursuing looked just like my dad, who was an atheist. She said, my dad, he said this. He said, save all you can and someday you can live however you want. And that's kind of the sense I got from these men as well. And the question Sally asked me was this. What is so different about money? Why is it you're so radical in some areas of your life, but when it comes to money, you kind of wash out and do what everybody else is doing? Why is wealth different? Now, this morning, my intent is not for you to go home and start throwing rocks at what everyone is doing with regard to money. But I want to challenge you on this one issue, to be willing to take the Scripture and build your life on this area, on what the Bible actually says. We want to look at some areas this morning. We're going to look at three different areas. First of all, I want to look at installing a kingdom filter. You're going to need some filters in your life. Everyone does, if you're going to achieve anything meaningful. We want to look at that. But I want to challenge you on what is the filtering device in your life. What are you using? Secondly, I want to look at developing a vision in your youth. Getting a proper vision in your youth of time and money during your younger years. We're going to look at just the amazing potential you have in your youth. And finally, living out your vision. We're going to look at the practical side. How do we actually live this out? What do we do with it? I want to talk about some topics like purchasing clothes, buying that first car, the use of credit. We'll look at some of those issues this morning. Let's begin by thinking about narrowing your vision. You know, you can't do everything. You just can't. It doesn't matter how much money you have even. You just can't do everything. Something has to be narrowed. So just for a moment, think about it like this. Just think about narrowing your focus down. It doesn't matter what it is you're after. If you're going to achieve something meaningful, you have to do this in life. I watched a man on a plane a while back. I was sitting on a plane near the aisle, and just ahead of me on the other side of the aisle was a man watching videos. And it became obvious pretty quick he was a coach for ice skating, figure skating. And he was watching these people twirl and whirl and do all kinds of amazing things. And I watched that, and I thought, that's amazing. Someone has dedicated their life, put hours and hours into spinning around on an ice skate. You know what it also meant? It meant that all those people I was watching had to give up something else to do that. They had to narrow their focus. You can't hang out at the mall all the time and still be a good ice skater. You can't do that. You've got to spend time. They had to narrow their focus. All of us do. Let's look at the words of Jesus. Jesus said, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." Now read this again and think, instead of eye, put vision there. The light of the body is your vision. If therefore your vision be single, your whole body should be full of light. What is your aim in life? What are you actually narrowing down toward? What are you shooting for? One way to find this out is look at how you've been spending your extra money. You know, money always follows our longings. Discretionary income always follows our longings. When you have extra money, it follows the thing you've been longing after. So if you want to know what you've really been longing after, look at where your extra money has been going. Everyone needs a filter. It's important to you to establish some filters in your life. And anyone, it doesn't matter who you are, even if you're not a believer, if you're going to ever do anything very meaningful, you have to have some filters. There's just too many options out there. Something has to be filtered out to achieve it. Let's look at this illustration just for a little. Notice there's garbage coming along in the water, and out the end we have pure water. That's what a filter does. We're all familiar with filters. Let's just apply this now an example. Let's just assume that your primary goal in life is someday to own an expensive sports car. You just have this mental image of driving an expensive, that's just what you want so badly. That means there's some other things that have to stop at that filter. That means that you can't be buying all the fishing equipment and baseball gear and new clothes and all this stuff. That stuff has to stop if you're actually going to buy that car. You're going to have to do that. Or maybe you want a trip to Africa. You just want a mission trip. That's what you want. If you're going to achieve that goal, something has to die. Something else, you can't do it all. You have to give up something else to actually achieve that goal. So what is it? If you want to buy a home in the future, something has to die. It's a basic concept that many young people today in America are not grasping. But it's very, very true. It's true in every society. If you're going to achieve something meaningful, you have to give up something. Examining your filter. Take a moment to examine your filter. What is it that you are shooting for? What are you actually after? Now, just for a moment, ignore all your good intentions. All the nice things you say at Bible study, all the goals you think you tell everybody and how you want to serve the Lord. What is actually getting through and what is actually stopping? Just for a moment, I want you to take a junkyard test. I want you to think about the things you're pursuing in life. Just the things you're purchasing with your money. How many of those will end up eventually in a junkyard? How many of those things will? Look at it for a little bit and think about that. Think about the things you're spending your money on. And I want you to look at this verse of Jesus. He said, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal." Jesus wasn't trying to make life difficult. He was trying to keep you from ultimate disappointment. Because lots of things in life will rust or mold or corrupt. And if your finances are going toward those kinds of things, that's your focus in life. It doesn't matter how nice of a sports car it is. It's eventually going to rust. You'll eventually be disappointed. Now, a materialistic focus in life many times speaks of something. It speaks of a lack of commitment and a clear conversion. I think you'll find that in the teachings of Jesus. So I want to think about that just for a little. We're going to back up even farther. Behind your finances, behind this decision making, what is really going on in your life? I'll tell a story, and this is a story I read years ago. It's about a man who built his house across the Arkansas-Missouri state line. This was a crafty old fellow. He figured if he built his house right across the state line, he wouldn't have to pay taxes in either state. And so the Arkansas side, they always assumed he was paying his taxes in Missouri, and the Missouri officials always assumed he was paying his taxes in Arkansas. The reality was he wasn't paying his taxes in either. So these authorities got together and they said, "Hey, what's going on here?" And so the state licensing tax people got together and they said, "Is he paying taxes over there?" And no, he wasn't paying taxes in either one. And so they went back and started looking at the law, trying to figure out, how do we decide who he pays taxes to? And they finally found this obscure law way back there that said that a man should pay his tax in the state that he sleeps in. So both of them got together and they snuck up on that house one night and they got their flashlights out and they peered in the window. And this crafty old codger has put his bed right over the state line. Now, that all may sound funny, but sometimes in our spiritual lives we do the exact same thing. Part of us wants to live over here in the light. We like to proclaim to people that we're following Jesus, but sometimes we're actually living over here in the shadows. And when we're with the religious crowd, we talk very spiritual. We know all the right terms. When we want to be with the cool crowd over here, we talk a little different about them. So we act different, but we're actually trying to have our bed across the line and live on both sides. And it looks something like this. When we're on the side of light, we say things like, "We need to share more with the poor." Maybe you go on a short-term mission trip and you come back just convicted that, yes, we really need to share more. We need to give more. In fact, lots of folks aren't giving like they should. But on the other side, we're involved in expensive hobbies. Vehicles, sporting equipment, and in spite of all of our words, our lives look very much like everyone else in society. Or maybe something like this. How you dress isn't that important. And we look around with condemnation on groups that maybe have set up standards and look very conservative, and we shake our heads, and that's obviously just not spiritual. I mean, that's pretty obvious. They're putting so much focus on something on the external, and it's all actually on the heart. We all know that. We can all talk about that. But on the other hand, we're also obsessed with fashion, name brand clothing, etc. So we're living one way on one side, talking another on the other side. We should be spending more time and money reaching out to the lost. I mean, we hear about great need in some countries, the need to share the gospel. Self-centeredness of older people in our congregation, we shake our heads. They go off to Florida and we don't know what the deal is with those people. They're just not thinking straight. But in our lives, we continue to chase more technology, texting and social networking. You know how much time youth today waste with technology? It's tremendous. In fact, recently I did a little study on this. Read some books. Many of the writers of these books were atheists. And I'm concerned today because they're more concerned than we are. They're more concerned about what's happening in our culture than we are. But you think about the amount of time it takes to spend all this texting and communicating and social networking. How many casseroles could have been taken to shut-ins during that time? How many letters of encouragement could have been written? Who do you actually belong to? I think that's something that every one of us need to come to. Before you ever get down to looking at finances, you need to answer that question. It's very possible to try to drag your bed across the line and just kind of live in both camps and massage each side wherever you are. But who do you actually belong to? You know, we sing lots of nice songs and we say lots of nice things and we talk about being totally surrendered. But are you really? Are you totally surrendered? Are you actually willing to let the Spirit of God dictate how your time and money is used? If you are, then you're ready to develop a vision. I want to think about that for a little. Developing a vision in your youth. I want to start by looking at the brief opportunity you have in your youth, just while you're young. And I'm going to look at a hypothetical scenario, and I don't know how all of you interact with your parents on this issue. I know in some homes the parents keep money as you grow up. Some they don't. But I'm going to just assume in this little illustration that this young man, we're going to call him Bill, we're going to assume that he is working and gets all of his income. We're going to examine a little what he might be doing with that income. And I'd like for you to ignore, if you can, the numbers, but try to get a picture from this. Let's start out with a graph here. And if you look at this graph, you're going to see that 15 years old, he's making about $3,000. Maybe he's working through the summer a little bit. And as he gets a little more valuable, able to work a little more, 16, 17, let's say 18, he finally can work full time now. His income jumps up, and up here at 19, he's making $20,000 a year. And again, as he gets more experience, he's more valuable to the company, that increases on up here. And finally up here, we have him at 27 years old, he's making about $27,000 per year. Now, let's look a little at another line. Let's add another line on there, and let's call this line his necessary expenses. Now, Bill works or lives with his parents, and so he doesn't need a lot of money to survive because his parents are taking care of his living expenses. But let's follow across here. Let's just say he doesn't spend very much, but about the time he's 18, he needs to buy a vehicle. Maybe he needs to get to work every day, and so he buys an older vehicle, pays about $7,500 for it. But notice his expenses are up a little higher now. He has insurance, and he has fuel, and there's some repairs now and then. Then over here, about 23, he meets Mary. And Bill and Mary, they court for a while, and about the time he's 24, he gets married, and his expenses just go right up here. Okay? And his expenses then follow this line. Now that's, again, you don't have to pay a lot of attention to the exact numbers, but get a picture of what happens in many young people's lives. Now, look at this picture here. The dark is dark blue is his expenses. The light blue is his income. And so that part there in the middle is discretionary income. If you add up those numbers, that's about $130,000 during those years that Bill went through that was not needed. That's how much money he made that was not needed for survival. That's just extra money that he had. Now, most people don't even think about this in their youth. You can ask about where'd all that money go? Well, we don't know. Where's it going in your life? If you have money coming in and no necessary expenses, what are you doing with that money? I've sat with young couples, young families before in my office, and I've seen them look out the window and almost cry and say, we went through so much money when we were young, and now we really need it and don't have it. Let's look for a moment, though, in the average American. And again, this may not even relate to any of you here. I don't even know you here. But just think about where this money could have went. Let's just imagine that Bill gets a cell phone. And his bill, with all the taxes, runs about $85 per month. Let's assume that he also likes to go to town occasionally with his friends and eat out. And he spends about $35 each week on an average on that. And let's just assume that in addition to the older truck, he needed a nice set of wheels. So he got a nice car. And by the time he makes the payment and pays the insurance, that's around $400 a month. He likes to stop in once in a while at the mall with his friends and look nice. So he gets some clothing and he spends about $75 a month on that. Some tennis shoes now and then, a new shirt, ski jacket. And then with fuel, car washes, a few small repairs, about $150 a month on that. And he has a few hobbies, likes to hunt and fish, and fishing tackle, clothing, magazine subscriptions, about $25 per week on an average. Then there's the miscellaneous, travel, gifts. Now, as you look at that pie chart I just created, if that was represented Bill's life, he would spend $130,000. That's where all of that would have went. Very possible in our society to totally waste that amount of money. You'll notice something on this. There's a couple things missing. One is giving. There's no charitable giving there. Nothing for the kingdom during those years. Now, Bill may have said, well, when I get older, you know, and have a little better job, and I'll start giving then. And saving. Well, there's really nothing left for saving. I mean, look at it. I mean, what are you going to do? And I've got to be with the kids and have cool wheels, and I've got to do all this. So let's say those two things are totally missing. But I want to show you something. I want you to get a picture of the potential that's here, and I want to show you another slide of the typical total lifespan of a man. This looks like this. You'll notice this little area right here is what we just talked about. That's in your youth. Let's just say that Bill got married here. There's no extra money for quite a while here. Finally, things loosen up here when he's about 45 to 50 years old. Maybe he gets his mortgage paid off and children start leaving home and it begins to drop. And let's just say he dies over here. Notice where the two dark blue areas are. They're in our youth and when we're older. Those are the two periods of life when we have extra discretionary income. That's almost universally true with people. There's a lot written today about this area right here. There's magazines and stuff coming into our home about retirement, how you need to be saving for retirement for that period of your life. But sometimes we ignore the waste that goes on right here. Tremendous amount of money could be used for the kingdom. It's being earned by our youth and wasting it. I've had young men come into my office to work for me before. I used to have a construction company, and I remember one time in particular I got a phone call from a young man. He said, I just got my W-2 here, and there's a mistake on it. And I said, okay. He said, yeah, it says I made this much, and I didn't make near that much. So I couldn't have. So I met him over at the office, and we fired up a computer and pulled it up, and sure enough, he had. But it was all gone. He couldn't imagine where it went to. But it went to things like pizza and cell phones and miscellaneous. It was all gone, all year. He was a sick young man when he suddenly realized how many thousands of dollars had went through his fingers during that last year. But get a picture of what could be done during those years. We'll come back to that. Discretionary time and money. Remember, you are a steward. God has placed both of these into your care, both of these into your hands, and you are a steward. A steward is not an owner. A steward doesn't own. But a steward will be called into account for how he uses what God has placed in his care. I want to challenge you to think about saving and serving. I want to say this too. How many of you have ever been on a short-term mission trip out of the country? Just raise your hand. Okay? How many of you have not ever went but would like to go? Okay, very good. Let me ask you one more question. How many of you think that you can really change the world in 2 weeks? Raise your hand. It's a very wise group. You can't change the world in 2 weeks. Now I want to just give you real quickly a little picture of how I'd like for you to think about short-term missions. Sometimes, so I'll say it like this. You can't change even a community in 2 weeks, but you can destroy one. It's very possible on short-term missions to do a lot of damage. Maybe I sound like a naysaying prophet, but I want you to think about this. We carry things in, technology and stuff, into these communities, and it's very possible to do damage. Be very careful what your goals are when you go. I don't want to discourage you from going, but I want to encourage you to go to learn. Go to get a vision. Go to get a picture of how to spend the rest of your life. You'll even be more effective while you're there if you can go with that kind of a vision. Your primary mission will still be where you live. You can go and get a vision, but come back and live it out there. I think sometimes we have youth that think that a mission trip is something where you go and check off your Christianity, where you go out for 2 weeks and do something and come home and live like you want. It's actually not that way. Your impact will be much greater right where you live and reaching out to people right where you are. Sometimes we think we have to go across the ocean. I think sometimes we need to go across the street and just bless people right where we are. It's okay to go across the ocean, but that's not your primary place to work. You know, I mentioned the thing with the young couples coming, young couples that are married coming and talking about their financial struggles. Even just a small portion of this $130,000 would bless them tremendously when they think about buying a new home. But sometimes it's all gone. I met with a couple one time that had two vehicles out in the parking lot. They both drive separately. They walked in, both of them carrying big drinks. They had no money. I think they had $6.23, something like that, total in assets, and had payments on both vehicles. And they couldn't understand what the problem was, and as I stood there and looked at them, they were carrying around in their hands about half their total net assets. It's very easy to get there by not thinking about what you're doing. Now, I want to think about living out your vision. You know, developing a kingdom-focused vision is just a beginning. But if you never live that vision out, it's worthless. A vision is worthless unless the tires actually hit the road. Look at a few areas to think about as you think about living out your vision. Let's think about choosing a career. Now, this, especially for young men, is extremely important to give thought to this, and especially the impact it has on the kingdom. First of all, I want to encourage you to consider it from a kingdom perspective. Will it give you interaction with others? What you do on a daily basis? Will it give you opportunity to reach out to others? You know, the world will tell you that careers should be based only on income. But I want to challenge you on that. There are things you can do sometimes that are much more important than just income. Now, income can be useful. We need it in the kingdom. But there's more things to think about than just income. Furthermore, business as a mission has really been neglected. There's tremendous opportunity in the workplace. You know what America needs? It needs people living out the fact the dollar does not rule their life. It needs people showing them in the workplace there's things more important to them than just chasing that dollar every day. And business gives you that kind of a platform if you'll let it. Consider your assets. You know, if you are all thumbs and you have a hard time doing things physically, then being a carpenter may not be for you. But you need to analyze what gifts God has given you. And I want to challenge you something else. Ask those that are older as you think about this. What kind of gifts do you have? What can be useful in your life? How can you choose a career that will actually bless the kingdom? And in all this, that needs to be the overriding vision over your life, is being a blessing for the kingdom. Some of you may have farming opportunities. That needs to be considered. It doesn't mean you have to do that, but that's one of the things you need to look at, is what resources are in your hand as you think about a career. Listen to those that are older. There's a problem today in America, and that's this. The young people assume that because grandpa doesn't know what a megabyte is, that he doesn't know anything. And that's not true. There's a lot of wisdom we can get. Youth is pitching the older people. and discarding them. But you'll find wisdom there. Find older godly mentors you can connect with. It's extremely valuable in your life. Let's think a little about clothes, cars, and credit. These are three areas that tend to sidetrack youth. I had a young man come to my house one time years ago. His finances were upside down and he was having difficulty. And he was a young man who had dealt with rejection a lot in his life. And the first thing I told him to do was to just start keeping a journal and just keep track of every single penny every single week and just write it down. He started coming to me every week and we'd sit down and every month and we'd look at his figures. I noticed something. He was spending, I think it was $100, $150 every month on clothes. And I asked him, I said, do you need more clothes? No, he said, I really don't. He said, I've got so many clothes at home, I just don't. He said, I had no idea I was even spending that much money on it. So I said, well, explain a little. When do you go shopping? He said, you know, it's a lot of times it's when there's a party or something and I wasn't invited to it. Or I feel rejection from somebody and I'm just not included in the group and so I end up going shopping, just kind of relieve the pain. And he was pouring money month by month just to relieve the pain. Money tells a lot about us. In fact, when I find a young man or a young woman that's struggling in finances, they are almost always struggling spiritually as well. The two will go together. I might explain more about that later. Let's look a little at cars and credit. You know, one of the greatest things in life, that, especially for young men, that you'll face is the thing of buying a car. And it can totally derail your financial life. I've observed this over and over again of young people being involved in credit, trying to get married, still paying for regrets from the past. And they pay for it every month for a long time. I know as youth, you probably like to read about martyrs. You like to read about young men who were called before magistrates and they were called to give an account there knowing their life was on the line. But I want to challenge you with something, especially you young men. You may never be called to stand before the magistrate. I don't know. But I think some of the greatest places you're called to stand is in the car lot. Some of the places you need to die is right there. Is be willing to say no to something because of a projected image. And that's why we buy these vehicles. We pay a lot of money for vehicles to project a certain image out there so people think about us in a certain way. We pay for it month after month. And the fact is, it doesn't actually impress people. But we don't always know that. And we pay for that month after month. Get advice from older people on this. Move slowly when you get to vehicles. But there's something I want to think about just for a little, and that's the concept of depreciation. That's the one thing that youth sometimes never even think about. In fact, it's not just youth. Sometimes older ones don't either. I want to think just a little about buying a brand new Chevy Silverado pickup. Let's just say that you look at that thing, that's exactly what you want. And it'd be nice to have four-wheel drive and a V8 to make it go. And so all this just really sounds pretty nice. You just like to have one. I want to look a little at depreciation on a 2014 Silverado Chevy pickup. This is estimated depreciation, but if you ignore the brand name for a little bit, ignore the dollars amount, get a picture in your mind, you notice that you're going to pay about $46,000 for that vehicle, and in 1 year, it's going to drop down here to about $34,000. Tremendous loss just in 1 year. More than all the fuel, more than all the insurance, more than all that. You've lost a tremendous amount of money in 1 year. If you go on out here, you're going to drop clear, and this is a 4 years, you're going to drop clear down to, what is it, $23,000 or so in 4 years. Drops about half. But notice, there's a lot lost in these first few years. In fact, it costs you about $451 per month just in depreciation over 4 years. Now, there was an advertisement a while back that said that Chevy is like a rock. I don't know if they still use that advertisement. Chevy is like a rock. I want you to think about that. Think about how fast rocks drop. That's what happens with value of new vehicles. Now, let's jump over. Let's just assume that you would buy a pickup that's 2010. That would cost you $185 a month. It's still a lot, but notice how much different it is from buying a new one. Tremendous loss just in the first couple of years, just in depreciation. Used cars are a better deal. But we may as well get to the cold facts of this issue, and this is what it is. When everybody else is driving a truck like this, when all your friends are talking about it and admiring it and waxing it and all that, it takes an extremely secure individual to drive into the church lot with something like this. Very secure. It takes someone who has their focus on something other than just peer pressure. Very difficult to do that. Now, I want to talk about this car a little bit. This isn't actually the car, but it's one real similar to this. There was a young man in my congregation who I observed. He had a vision for the kingdom. He really wanted to be used of the Lord. He was frugal. And he had a job that was about 35 miles away from home. And all he was after was transportation. And so he bought an old Honda Civic about like this. He did the math. You know, the paint wasn't very good. It had dents in it. For 3 years, I think he paid $700 to drive that thing home. And for 3 years, he endured the teasing and the laughter and the jokes and all that of the young people. And 3 years later, he sold it. His job changed. He needed a different vehicle. And so I called him up. I said, I want to know the facts. Just what did it actually cost you all that time? How many repairs, all that, did you have? Well, he paid $700 for it. He had $200 one time to get the air conditioner fixed on it. And he sold it for $300. And the whole thing, his total cost other than normal wear and tear was the $200 for the air conditioner. It worked out to 1 cent per mile in depreciation. Now, you will find that many, if you buy a new vehicle, you'll pay about a dollar a mile in depreciation many times. You think about that, how much he saved just over those years. Now, all that's past now. This young man has been able to save money and buy a home and move on. All the laughter and the teasing, all that is past. But he was able to actually apply what we're teaching today. That's very, very difficult. Very hard. I won't even ask for a show of hands of how many of you young men would want to do that. But vehicles like this, older vehicles that are very reliable, can be very useful if you're actually serious about following the Lord in this area. I've heard young men say this, I wouldn't be caught dead in something like that. But I want to tell you something, that's the only way you will be found in it. Because you're going to have to die to self to actually do that. Remember, some of the worst car accidents don't happen on the road. They happen on the showroom floor. They happen with a little pressure coming from a salesman at the wrong time. And I've talked to many people like this who got a little pressure and it looked so nice and just pressured them into something that really was not part of a long-term kingdom vision. What about consumer debt? Another major challenge in life. You know, there's a lot of pressure out there, even just with behind-the-scenes marketing, trying to persuade youth that having a credit card makes you an adult. But credit cards don't make you an adult. They make you a slave. I'm not saying you should never use a credit card, but be very, very careful with them. It's much better to use cash or even a debit card than to, especially if you can't get it paid off. But even if you can, there's a lot of studies been done on this issue. In fact, when I give seminars sometimes to families, I ask them the question about credit cards and how they use them. Many of us, I've had many couples come up and say, well, we always pay ours off every month, as though that takes care of the issue. But understand that we, most of us, tend to spend more with a credit card than we do with cash. There's something about paying with cash that hurts. If I give someone a $20 bill, it's like a part of me is leaving. There's some labor went into that thing. But I can swipe a card. It's painless. Even checks are easier than cash. But when you get all the way to just swiping a card, it's like the disconnect is complete. And you don't even feel the pain. And a lot of marketers know this. A lot of companies know this. That's why they want you to have their credit card. Be very leery of all the dynamics that go into credit cards. Credit card debt has become normal. This is true in America. It's a very high number that the average American has. I just want to challenge you today to be different. You don't have to do that. Let's think a little about the need for personal discipline. Now, I mentioned earlier that almost every young person who's in financial trouble also struggles spiritually. Let me explain to you why that is. If you're going to be successful, even just in a financial way, it means giving up present pleasure for future gain. It means not eating that pizza right now, or not having that expensive cell phone, or all the things that would be fun to do because you have a long-term goal. You know, there's a lot of similarities between that and Christianity. Christianity is the same way, isn't it? We're giving up right now many things that might be pleasurable, that might feel good, because we have our vision on something else. And when self-discipline is lacking in your life, you'll struggle in both areas. Let me say this. I listened to a speaker a while back, and I'm still trying to ponder this. I'll just throw it out and let you think about it. He said this. He said, if you were born after 1950, you struggle with discipline in your life. And I was born after 1950, and I think he's probably right. He simply meant that those that lived before that had to work harder or more diligent. It was ingrained in them. So what I want to impress on you today is you are starting out life and your Christian life with a handicap. You just are. You've been put into a soft society. That's where you've been born. And discipline is going to be uphill for you. It's not going to be easy. Maybe you think there's some people out there that it's easy for them to be disciplined. But I haven't met them yet. Discipline is difficult in our society. Let's think about personal devotions a little bit. If you're serious about being a good steward, if you're serious about being a good follower of Jesus Christ, you need to have a good devotional life. You need to be seeking God daily. Is that easy? You know, there was one individual in my life that I thought it was easy for when I was younger. He came to me one day and confessed he was having struggle in that area. I think all of us struggle with it. Now, I want to give you some hope. If you, while you're young, will get into a pattern and a habit, make it a habit in your life of getting up early every morning and seeking the Lord, it will become easy. I've found that in my own life. But it takes accountability sometimes in your youth. It takes asking someone else to hold me accountable. I had a time where I had someone call me every morning at 5 in the morning to make sure I was out of bed because I struggled with it. But if you're diligent, if you really want to pursue God, He can be found, but it will take personal discipline. It's easy to talk about prayer and all this and seeking the Lord, but if you're honest in your own heart, it's difficult in our culture. But the reason I tie this into finances is this. If you really want to be guided by a different reference point than everyone else in America, you're going to need to get close to God. That's going to need to come first. Don't try to separate the two. You can't just make a list of hard things to do in your life and hope to achieve that without God. You're going to need Him. Get very familiar with the Sermon on the Mount. Memorize it. I had all of our children memorize the 5th, 6th, and 7th chapters of Matthew. Extremely important. Pray over those. Find out what Jesus is asking you to do in those. Don't just circumvent them. Don't just go for all the easy reading material out there. One of the things in America that's happening is we want something that's already been chewed for us. We want to find some MP3 sermon that we can listen to and not have to actually think about it. It's all available out there, but nothing will replace getting on your knees and spending time with God yourself. Pray over the teachings of Jesus. Ask for a path in your finances. The Lord will give you direction in that. Integrity and work ethic. This is one thing that I think is so needed today in our youth. It's so needed. You know, sometimes I think we react. I know we do. Maybe there was a generation that focused too much on work, too much on business, too much on work ethic. But I think sometimes we've raised now a generation that would like to sit underneath a palm tree somewhere in flip-flops and tell people about Jesus. That's not integrity. Your largest, most effective mission place may be in the workplace. Just actually working and being, having a good work ethic, showing people your diligence by your lifestyle. View your job as an outreach. I want to show you a picture that to me represents where we're at today. Here's someone who was painting a white line, and there was a tree branch laying here, and they just went around it. That's what's happening in the workplace today. Sometimes I think in America it's got so bad that if you just show up and you're warm and vertical, you're a good worker. Show them something different. Show them that you can be a good example of Jesus Christ in your work ethic. Paul said this, "Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God." I want to tell you something. If you don't have a good work ethic, please don't pass out tracts. Don't go out there and try to give tracts to people if you're not willing to be diligent in your work. You're wasting your time and probably doing damage to the kingdom. First, start with a good work ethic. Be diligent. Faithfulness in work provides an excellent foundation for outreach on the job. "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, for you serve the Lord Christ." This is the next verse. "But as you work, visualize who you're working for." It's not just to keep a job, not just to make money. You're working for the Lord Christ. That will change everything about how you work, how you relate. I've had young men work for me that, you know, that everyone does good the first couple of days, but then it begins to taper off. But I've had other young men work for me. There's one in particular that used to work for me, and I would get to work 10 minutes early or so on a project, and he was already there. He was out there walking around thinking through the day, trying to decide how he could be most effective in his work. Now, that young man I'm going to listen to. And if you're an unbeliever and have a young man like that working for you, you're going to listen to him. There's something in that man that you know you need and maybe even lack. In fact, in our society today, that is so rare. It will be like a candle in a dark room. It will shine out. Purpose to have integrity and a good work ethic at work. Let's look a little at personal finances. I want to encourage you today to have some kind of a budget in place. And this is difficult with youth because your finances aren't very complex. And so sometimes it seems like a waste of time. But I want to encourage you to have some sort of finances, some sort of budgeting for your finances in place. Just to illustrate this, I want to give you a little picture here. Remember, the reason you're doing this is to properly steward the resources God has placed in your care. That's why you're doing it. It's not to get wealthy someday. It is to properly steward what He's placed in your care. Just picture for a little bit a barrel. Let's call that your checkbook or your bank account. And your income, your paycheck comes into that barrel. On the side of this barrel, there's some holes. And so it flows out. Over here is giving and new clothes and eating out and vehicle expense and hobbies and so forth. Now, the placement of these holes are very important. Because if too much goes out down here, nothing goes out on these holes. So in this particular situation, why this young man or young woman spent so much down here in hobbies and vehicle expense and new clothes and eating out, that nothing's going out the giving hole anymore. Nothing's going out the savings hole anymore. Some comments I hear from youth like this, something like this: "I'd like to give, but I just don't quite make enough. I'd like to save, but I really can't." And it doesn't matter. I spend most of my time in third world countries. And it doesn't matter where you are. It's the same issue. This last winter, I was giving a talk in Honduras. I was in a church and I got all done. A man on the front row raised his hand and he said, I've been talking about savings. And he said, sir, I appreciate what you said, but you don't understand what it's like here in Honduras. We don't make enough to save. We don't make that kind of money. We can't save money here. And they said, if you'd give us something, we'd be able to earn more money and then we could save money. But unless you do that, we really can't do anything. And I told him, I said, well, I don't live here. So maybe you're right. But I do have a question. These poor people that you're talking about, do any of them drink Coca-Cola? And he has hung his head. Because everybody in Honduras drinks Coca-Cola. In fact, the average in Honduras buys a Coke and a bag of chips almost every day. So right after that, I put a screen up there and showed them, if you would just stop drinking that Coke and eating those chips, what it would look like in a week, in a month, in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years. In 10 years, would have paid for a house in Honduras. They couldn't believe that. That's true in all societies. It's especially true here. I come back sometimes from these third world countries and listen to whining here. We don't know what we're talking about. So much could be used for the kingdom here that's being wasted because of how we live. But as you think about budgeting, think about this. Because as we drill holes, there's low priority and high priority. Those down the bottom is what's really important. Now, before we move on, think about this. If you have a choice right now between saving for a house and canceling your cell phone, which is most important to you? That's what I'm talking about when you drill holes. Because something has to go sometimes. One of those is more important to you. I want to challenge you, as you think about doing this, do it from a biblical point of view. So that when the water goes down, something's going to be lost. But don't let it be savings and giving. Keep that down there on highest priority in your life. Now, we looked at this in a hypothetical situation, but I want to take this $130,000 we talked about earlier and transfer it over and just think for a little about what could happen. I want you to think for a moment about dividing your money up into three areas in your youth. Now imagine that 50% of each paycheck that was not needed was going to savings. And just imagine if you did that, you'd have $65,000 by the time you were ready to be married to put onto a house. If you put 25% of unneeded income into the kingdom, it'd be $32,000 would have went into the kingdom during those years. Now, I want to say this. I'm not telling you these are the percentages you should use. I think you need to decide that on your knees. I think every one of us needs to wrestle with those issues of how much to give. I just simply want you to think a little bit about what could happen, what you could do if you would use this little brief opportunity you have in your youth. Now, I want to, in conclusion, go back to this one. I want you again to look at the brief and wonderful opportunity you have right now. There's another one coming if time lasts and things go like normal. But right now, you're right here. Think about the potential that you have right there. I want to stop for a little bit and see if there's any questions that any of you have. I'd be glad to try to answer something. Mark, where am I at on time? I forgot to ask you. Is it time now? Okay. Any quick questions before I end? Okay, well, the Lord bless you. I'm thrilled to see a group like this that has a desire to sit here and learn and follow the Lord Jesus. The Lord bless you as you go from here.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.